Hello, it's Kathy Love here. I'm a business coach who helps allied health professionals run powerful and profitable businesses in the disability sector. It's my pleasure to share up more private practice stories and wisdom in this, our third season. My guests are generous, creative, and honest. It has been such a joy to be able to hold these conversations and capture these moments for your listening pleasure. We're sure that you'll really enjoy these unplugged chats and these private practice heart-to-hearts. So settle in, let's get the conversation started. Kerri-Ann Telford is an occupational therapist and has a private practice that is growing at a spectacular rate in the eastern suburbs of Melbourne. Her business is only 3 years old, but 3 years later, Kerri-Ann has got a team of five occupational therapists and three admin staff. From the get-go, she used practice management software and from the get-go, built out expectations and systems around that software. It's very much been the brain in the box for her business. During this conversation, you're going to hear that team culture, organizational culture is everything. And you'll hear a bit about those that have inspired Kerri-Ann with her practice. You'll also hear about the very long hours that she works as well. To round it all out, we talk about the NDIS, the opportunities and the challenges. We talk about the inequity of the planning process and assisting children and families through that process. And there's a little sneaky bit in there about prepping for the audit, the upcoming audit as well. I am very sure that you will enjoy this conversation and hear about the tenacity and energy that Kerri-Ann brings to her business. Enjoy. Hello, everybody. Today on the podcast, we have Kerri-Ann Telford. Kerri-Ann is an occupational therapist and has a practice in Melbourne. And she's going to be telling us about the fast growth and all of the fun that comes along with that. So we are lucky to have her. She's a very busy lady. Hello, Kerri-Ann. How are you?
Good, thank you.
Good. So school holidays are just done and it's back to term three.
Yes. Yes, we're getting ready for that. It's actually my first day back at work today. I was away in New Zealand for 10 days skiing. So I have that lucky ability now that I've got this awesome team around me that I can step out, and I came back in this morning and everything was still here, still going fine.
That is amazing. That is amazing. It's, yeah, there's interesting business commentary on the business owners that take the most holidays have the most profitable, busy businesses. So maybe you're proving that one from the get-go. Who is under your roof at the moment? Who makes up the team?
Yeah, so at the moment we have five therapists. We've got, therapists at work 2 days. So we've got an amazingly experienced therapist from Erebina, who was actually one of the lead therapists there, who's come over to join us. So we're really lucky to have her with all her experience. That's Gwenda Moore. We have Carly Joyce, who started out with me as a new grad and had done some amazing work in ASD before that. So she's here with me. We've got May Lee, who she has been with me for the past 3 years now, actually, and she's had a little bub in between, but she's an OT who trained in Singapore and through the La Trobe program and has all sorts of amazing skills along with being able to speak four languages. And we have Camilla, who joined us last year. So she works with us 3 days a week and she has lots of amazing skills and worked at a special developmental school at Glen Allen, where she was a very popular therapist, and she's had a few clients follow her from the school. And we have Rebecca Zara, who has joined us in the last 4 months, and she also works at a special developmental school and is working with us 2 days a week. So, yeah, we've got a pretty amazing, diverse team, and I feel very blessed and lucky to have those girls around.
yeah, it's just gone from strength to strength. We'll go back to the beginning in a tick. Have you gone the independent contractor or the employee route with your crew?
I have both. So definitely the newer girls, I guess, that maybe haven't worked in private practice before or were new grads, I've definitely I've given everyone the opportunity to basically choose what route they would prefer. And, yeah, so I've got a combination of both. I guess with contractors, you do have that ability to maybe offer a little bit more per session so it looks on paper. But for me as a business owner, I'm really happy to do what works best for the clinician and the practice. I think it's really nice having a mixture of both, to be honest, because I can leave lots of to-do lists around the place, or if I can see, you know, there's been a couple of cancellations, we can kind of really work together and get some other things done. So, yeah, I think it's worked really well for us. I guess the only thing I was just thinking, Kathy, when we were talking about our team, I haven't mentioned our amazing admin girls that we have. So we've actually got three admin girls, and we have admin across the 5 days, as well as an amazing bookkeeper. So, yeah, it is like a really nice little team that we've got now, or big team. So we realised when we had our team meeting and dinner the other night, we were like, oh, gosh, this has grown, hasn't it?
But, so many humans. Well, it has grown. Your business is 3 years old. I'm doing some quick maths here. Two and a half, 3 years?
Yeah. Yeah, 3 years. And so I started out in 2015 when I made a decision to kind of go out on my own after having worked in private practice for almost 6 years. In quite a similar capacity, I guess. And, yeah, I just thought it was time to step out into my own shoes and put on my big girl pants and see if I could do it on my own. And I've always had lots of ideas. And, yeah, so I just went for it. So I started out, like a lot of us do, working out the boot of their car. Didn't quite have the luxury of being able to have, you know, separate work as well as starting my private practice. So I basically stepped in full steam ahead, gave up my fantastic job that I had in private practice for the last 6 years, 5.5 years, and went, cool, I don't know when I'm next going to get a paycheck or how much money I'm going to get at all, and worked out of the boot of my car for the first 6 months until I found the right room to start practicing from. So I started off like just subleasing a room within a another centre, and have grown from there. I ended up with a couple of therapists working with me. So I've always done a combination of school and kinder visits as well as days in the clinic. So when I had Maylee come along and she was looking for work, and I was like, wow, this girl is amazing. I have to figure out how I can have her, because I had this wait list of clients, and the phone just wasn't stopping ringing. So we made it work. So we both worked 5 days a week and shared the clinic room across 6 days. So yeah, I would do 3 days out of the clinic 1 week and 2 days in, and we would just kind of, yeah, rotate around. So that worked really well. And then we had our first admin came on board at that time, just basically doing all the picking up all the bits and pieces at the end. I was still sort of taking all the referrals and everything until the start of this year, when we moved to this clinic in Nunna Wadding, which again was another huge step, where I had to sign a 5-year lease and spend a lot of money fitting out a building, and spent what felt like my entire life working, painting walls, organizing builders, everything else. So yeah, the end of last year was insane, but I was very lucky to have a lot of people around me that supported me, and yeah, my partner and my family, everyone got a job.
Everyone had to build one thing from IKEA.
Yeah, it's probably a bit ridiculous what we ended up doing ourselves, but I've got a family that's in the building industry as well. So my dad had lists of equipment that I needed built, and slides and platforms and rock climbing walls and fireman ladders and all sorts of things. So and we got the building up and running, and we've got three awesome sensory gyms, and we've got a shared office and kitchen and lovely waiting area. So yeah, that's us.
Gosh, that just sounds incredible. I have to come and have a little bit of a look. So what does the week look like? Who's doing what? How busy are you? When are you in? When are you out?
Kathy, you won't love the way my week looks. I know when I met with you, I think it was probably over a year and a half ago now, you were like, Carrie-Anne, you're seeing too many clients. You need to spend more time building up the rest of the stuff. Well, I can't say that's changed a lot at this point in time. It's always my goal, but even as we've had all the new girls come on, everyone's caseloads are kind of full. So my week looks like I do some consulting at Melbourne Grammar on Monday. So I'm still usually there on Mondays. Tuesdays I also have a visit day where I do a few private clients, as well as going to Wesley College. And then I have 3 days a week usually in clinic, but I also have, I work at a school in Shepparton, so I'm still driving there every fortnight, and I have another therapist go there on the other week.
I've run out of weekdays already, just saying.
Yeah, because we work with at a school which is 80% ESL, and it has Iranian and Iranian.
Oh, in Shepparton. Up in Shepparton.
Yeah.
Okay, I know, yep.
So we're still doing that work, and I just can't give it up because we love going there and supporting those the kids, but also really supporting the teachers to really understand the developmental profiles of those children and understanding where the behaviours are coming from and what we can do to support them within that educational setting. So, I guess I'm like a lot of other people. I don't have a lot of my days are very much booked out by the time I've booked in mentoring, and I do some external mentoring as well, and seeing all my kids and then mentoring internally and supporting the admin staff. I'm fair to say that I work pretty hard and then like to book in the holidays.
Okay. Assuming you've got some energy left for some fun when you get off.
Oh yeah, I know. I was like, why did we choose to go skiing this holiday? I feel like I need to sit on a bench.
Yeah, I mean, businesses take hard work. It's about finding some sort of balance at some point, and whatever that looks like for you is whatever it looks like for you. Yeah.
Yeah, and I guess, in the future, I guess that is my plan, to be able to, develop more programs and sit back and make sure the place is running as best as it possibly can, and everyone is as well supported as they can be, and maybe me having a little bit more processing and thinking time. But I guess the number one goal is to always, support the families and make sure we've got something that's viable and up and running, so we can keep the doors open and continue to support all these people. And, it is a big responsibility making sure that you've got, you take these employees on board and contractors, and you've got admin people, and, it's kind of my responsibility to make sure that things work and that we've got money in the bank and we can pay the bills and do everything we need to do. So I'm kind of, I don't think I'll be in the exact same position in 5 years' time as I am right now, but I guess it's not that hard when you love what you do every day either, is it?
Yeah, absolutely. But still is only so much time. So what, given the really rapid growth you've had in the 3 years, what has surprised you about what you've learned?
I guess I'm a fairly critical thinker, I would say. So I generally kind of do think about all the things that might go wrong first, because I do often have big ideas. So I guess just being a person who thinks in that way has enabled me to be able to kind of see what the worst looks like and then make a goal and go for it anyway. So I've only ever really been pleasantly surprised, if that makes sense.
Let's reframe that really quickly as a natural talent for risk assessment and management.
Yeah, that's right. One of those SWOT analysis yes. things that you're talking to me about. Yes. Yeah, so I guess, there's nothing has been, I guess I feel quite lucky in that things have gone quite well. I am very much open to getting advice from different people and hearing their thoughts and ideas. I know when this idea popped into my head before I even went and dabbled in anything, I think one of the first things I did is I kind of had my ideas in my head and I had them in there for a while. And one of the first things I did was book a mentoring session with you. And I think that's when you first finished up at your old practice and had started your consulting. So, I guess I wasn't afraid to spend money at the start in talking to people and getting some advice and understanding what it might look like and how to do it. Mm. And I guess I did. I just put away a lot of money in sort of probably the 6 to 12 months before I thought I was going to do it, and then just went for it.
Yeah, good. Commend you for that energy. Where and how and when have you picked up all the business smarts along the way?
Well, like I said, I guess I don't know if I'm that great at it, but I bought my first car when I was 17 and I paid for it with like $17,500 cash, which I had earned from working as I worked in a hardware store for 8 years when I was at school and during my university years. So I guess I was always a pretty hard worker and into kind of, you know, playing with numbers and seeing where things are at, and I had a goal that I was going to buy my first car. So I guess it started right from the beginning for me. My family has a fairly big business in manufacturing and things. So I've been around people in business for a long time. I did some private consulting work when I worked as a new grad. I worked in a hospital for a couple of years, and after I'd been working there for about 8 months, I had someone from like the local Aboriginal service say, "We just can't get anyone to do enough OT work for, will you come and do some consulting for us just out of hours?" So I started doing some private consulting, set up my own little ABN and did some private consulting out of hours on Saturdays and things, as you know, when I'd been working for like 6 months as an OT doing shower rails and shower chair assessments and wheelchair fittings and things like that. So I guess it's probably always been in me. I read a lot. I look to other people for advice, and I guess I've often told I'm quite a pragmatic person, so I think that kind of fits with the business side of things. I wouldn't say I'm the best creative thinker, but I am fairly pragmatic with the way I think about things. So, I've got good accountants and things like that as well. I'm not afraid to ask for advice, but I'm a fairly conservative, I guess, in my thinking and spending and things like that as well.
Yeah, they're probably the biggest ingredients about the success you've had so quick is having a bit of a head for numbers and being well informed and asking for help and taking risks and steps that really are within your appetite for success. Have you got some favorite books?
I don't know if there's one book that I particularly go, that's the best. In terms of business, I know the very first one that I read was like The Business Basics for Health Professionals, which now to look at, you're like, oh, that's really basic. But I guess for me that kind of set things up in a bit of a way of some things that I needed to think about. I kind of read all the stuff about all the emotional intelligence stuff, I guess, I find really interesting, along with I listen to like Seth Godin's stuff, just the leaders and how to be a tribe leader. And then I guess just, yeah, I don't get any information from one source at all. I like read a number of different blogs, something pops up, I like it, I go for it.
I guess the nature of business is such that you need to pull so many pieces from all sorts of places to get to build the picture. And the emotional intelligence stuff is unbelievable, and it's such a natural fit with Allied Health. We kind of know that stuff, and we kind of have heard it in other languages and other kind of frameworks, but it's really, really cool, some of the stuff that is there. I'd love to know how you're using it with leading your team.
Yeah, I guess that's probably my next thing that I know that I need to work on a whole lot more. Like, my team is amazing and they're all doing a fantastic job, and everyone's happy and comes into work every day, which I guess they're the ones that you know you're hitting your goals there. But I guess that's my next sort of personal development thing, is really making sure, what can I do? How can I make sure our team stays amazing and everyone feels great about what they're doing every day? I guess awareness, though, is probably the biggest thing that I'm getting from all my reading and the mentoring. And it's just having that awareness of your staff and where they're at in that point in time and what they're needing next from you. I really feel lucky to have the girls that I have, and yeah, want to support them the best way that I can. And I know that, Richard Branson's sort of famous quote is, look after your staff and they'll look after your customers. And, you know, the number one priority is your staff, not necessarily the customer. And I guess that is kind of, you know, I can't be there to see every client that comes through the door and make sure they're happy, but the girls here can. So I know if we all have great relationships and are all working towards the same goal and are thinking, you know, in similar ways, that really can happen. And I get some amazing feedback from, you know, families and kinder teachers and things like that. And it kind of, you know, it brings you shivers down your spine to get that amazing feedback about your staff that you're kind of, you know, we know that, I know they're awesome, but to hear that from other people is so, that's exactly what you want as a business owner and as a mentor to your staff. So, yeah, I guess I've gone off a bit there, but that's where we're at with that side of things.
Yeah, that particular quote, I was nearly going to say it before when you were talking about your team. It's quite a confronting one for many Allied Health business owners, because we're so client customer focused. That's why we went to university, was to do that direct work. But to be kind of stepping through quite quickly into a leadership role and really developing confidence and capability and capacity and compassion, 4 C's, with your team, really, you're exactly right, sets them off to represent you and your business's values and get great outcomes, and also allows them to develop their own personal brand as a clinician as well. To be able to kind of step through and have a bigger impact on your team, and that they then push down and have a really positive impact on the clients is, yeah, way to go, way to go. Mm.
Thanks. Yeah, I think, yeah, we're really getting there in all of those aspects. So,
yeah.
Yeah, it's enjoyable to kind of see it grow, but I guess that's my next step as well, is to making sure we can sustain where we're at, and that, you know, staff, that our team can remain amazing.
Yeah, yeah. Before we hit record on today's chat, you mentioned that you're using Power Diary. What impact does using some practice management software have on your business?
I've only ever used practice management software. Yes. I started with it from day one because I was so used to it from the old clinic that I had worked at that we used practice management software. So, yeah, just the diary management aspects of it, the accounting capabilities, we hook in through Xero as well. I don't know life any other way, I guess, but I could see that I would have no idea how to even manage my own diary. Everything goes in Power Diary for me, my hairdresser appointment.
Good.
to when I need to go to the gym, everything's in there. So it's the everything diary. And just, you know, it's ease of use as well for the girls. I sort of don't like to micromanage anyone. I say, you know, if they've had a cancellation in the afternoon, yeah, get out of here, go home, you know, and they can type their notes when they see fit, you know, they can go for a walk or go to the gym when it's still daylight hours or all of those sorts of things. So I think it also just makes it easy for everyone that we can check in what our day is going to look like. We can type our notes. We can do what we need to do from anywhere.
Yeah, I got no words. I don't know how people do it without that software. I'm just, aghast at, how complicated business life must be unless you have that brain in a box that anchors all your client data and all your scheduling and your notes and, it can automate so many other things as well and potentially save a human role. So, I don't need any convincing at all. Let's swap to a different sort of question. I'd love to know how you're finding the NDIS.
Yeah, the NDIS. So it's obviously, I think, an amazing, the idea of it is absolutely amazing about what it can bring to people with disabilities. I guess for service providers, while I think it can have an amazing potential, the way that it's been rolled out and the uncertainty of what's within each layer is quite tricky as a business owner to try and plan and predict and know what's coming next, and also how we can, you know, implement programs that maybe we've run in the past, but then the NDIS price guide is nothing at all like the cost of providing that service. And then you go, well, ethically, how can I run that program and say that it's this price and then exclude a certain group of people because they've got NDIS funding, but that's not enough to cover that part of the program? Or, you know, what it's going to look like if they bring in these levels 1, 2, and 3, and who's going to be classified under what level? Because when you read, again, when you read their examples, I'm like, I'm not sure how that's going to be interpreted by the planners or the LACs. I guess I am a little bit concerned about, I think, the view of some of the LACs, of some of the feedback that I'm getting, that maybe providers are not necessarily in it for the right reason, that we might be, you know, I'm just like, for them to state things like that service providers will just tell you to have as many sessions as you possibly can so they can get more money. I'm like, you know, that sort of breaks my heart to think that I would be recommending therapy for a child that doesn't need it. I'm like, you know, for half the time I'm convincing a parent it's okay to take a break from therapy for this term. Go and focus on this other thing, you know. Why don't we just try gymnastics for a term instead of OT? I think it's going to be really great for the social participation. Yeah, I guess I don't like that it's created this a bit of a negative in the field maybe that we're not. I'm like, no, we're actually all in it for the same reason. We all love the kids. We all love the families. We all want to support people with disabilities. And the other thing that I've said to some of the families that have had trouble with their coordinators, I'm like, we've been in this before NDIS. We'll be in it if NDIS moves again. We're not in it to take advantage of the NDIS and the money that they have. But, you know, we want to be there to support our families should they have that funding and want to choose to use it with us. I guess it's a little bit tricky in that aspect difficulty planning for the future with all their sort of policies and procedures and guidelines. You know, I've been through all the guidelines, I've got all my tags numbered in my books, and I'm rewriting policies and things at the moment to try and make sure we're fitting perfectly within the NDIS standards. But it's really tricky to kind of justify the time and money some of that stuff is going to take in terms of certification when we're just not sure what it's going to look like in a year from now, in 2 years from now. So, yeah, it's just you don't want to put too much energy into one side of a business when you're not quite sure what the outcome of that's going to be. And I guess for me that's kind of tricky because it's like we don't have a lot of choice in that part of the destiny. And obviously as a business owner we lack a bit more control.
Yeah, fair to say it's messy at the moment, fair to say. What do you think is going to happen maybe later in September with the tiered pricing? What's your hunch?
I'm not sure. I'm guessing they're going to put it through. And I follow a lot of pages and things on business pages and things and OT things through America, and I just feel like we might be pushing more towards what the American system looks like in terms of qualifying for services and what criteria you have to meet and what item number you have to bill under for this, and or if that hasn't been officially written down like that, we can't bill under that code. And I guess I just get really bad vibes from those people over in America that are telling me that they're seeing like 14 clients a day for 20 minutes each, that, you know, and if they don't do that, they're unable to bill. And it just doesn't sound very client-centered to me, and it seems, yeah, it's just not quite the way we want to work.
Yeah, it's that lurking insurance model. While it has its merits, it also has its mayhem and what feels very unethical to a lot of us as allied health providers.
And I guess for me, what I've said like my entire career is when a parent comes in and they're really worried about the diagnosis of their child and what their child's doing, and I always say, do you know what? We don't even have to worry about the diagnosis part right now. We just need to map out and understand your child for who they are and what they can do. And we're going to go from there to build them up with their developmental milestones. And we can look at diagnoses and things as we need to, but it doesn't have to be our priority. You know, our priority is your child and their ability to function and what they can achieve. And, you know, we want all those kids to be able to reach their potential. So kind of this part where, you know, we're getting families that just come in and they tell you horrible stories about the process that they've had to go through to get this funding, and I'm like, oh, it doesn't really need to be like that. Why do we have to, you know, but yeah.
Make it so soul-destroying and so deficit-based, yeah.
I guess the fact that we're then going to have to, you know, the first time we meet a family, well, if you've got any chance of getting funding, you need to go to the pediatrician. These are things we have to write down that are wrong with your child. We have to try and push this diagnosis through. You know, it just makes it not that lovely.
Oh, I know. I know. And the NDIS, when it first started, gave us that glimmer of a real respectful human rights model. But now it seems to be diverting back to something, you know, out of the 90s or the 80s with that medical kind of how bad is it approach, which is very distressing for many who have really, yeah, invested in shifting things forward and all that good stuff.
Yeah, and even, yeah, I don't know, there's lots of things coming back from the parents. And even for me, just the inconsistencies that I see between plans, I can stand two kids side by side, really similar in function, and I'm like, one child has got $54,000 of funding and the other one's got six. And I'm like, how is this happening? And it just doesn't seem, it just doesn't seem fair. And I, of course, I don't tell the families that, but I'm just like, how are they working this out? And and we come up with and you know, then you get reports where they're saying they don't want to read certain reports from providers, and so then I'm trying to, you know, really educate families on how to do it. You know, we have our kind of planning support meetings, pre-planning support meetings with them to try and really help them know how to advocate for their child. But it's really horrible when you just have to constantly tell parents that, no, I need you to think about their worst day. And, you know, the families that are amazing at like juggling and holding everything together and managing their kids. And, you know, I'm like, you deserve as much funding as anyone else just because you're amazing at it and, you know, are working super hard and don't crumble. Doesn't mean that they don't need more help than somebody who kind of falls apart quite quickly. And that is also reflected in the plans I see as well. So, yeah, I guess it's just a tricky part to navigate. And we get a lot of stressed parents from it, which is the sad part.
Yeah, hard to see. What do you think the next 12 months is going to bring you?
I guess we're looking here once we're almost at capacity using three of our rooms full-time as well as having a few therapists doing visits and things on different days. So, yeah, hopefully we can just kind of continue to, I guess, have full sessions and things here. In terms of NDIS, I'll be interested to see how that pans out. I'm preparing for certification but haven't 100% decided either way at this point in time. It's going to be a bit tricky though because I'm kind of keen to see what happens with the tiered pricing and how kids are graded before I make that final decision, but I'm not sure if we're even going to have that much clarity for quite some time after that. So I think we'll plan for that and at least put lots of things in place to try and make sure as an organisation we're very compliant with all of those things anyway. Hopefully I can drop back some clinical hours and spend a bit more time developing our services that we offer here. We're looking at maybe some different kind of programs to run or some holiday. We do aquatic occupational therapy. I've got another therapist trained in that does it with me, and I've got another therapist that I'm currently training at the moment. So there'll be three of us in the pool each holidays. Yeah, we're looking at maybe running a kids yoga group here as well. We're just looking at lots of creative ideas about what the families and kids are kind of looking for next and what's going to support them. Looking at the moment how I can kind of get some sort of poll happening about some education programs that we can offer to run here for families as well. I'm doing a couple of talks. I'm going to a parent retreat and presenting on the SOS sensory processing and feeding challenges in a couple of weeks. So, yeah, probably full steam ahead. Still here for the next 12 months, Kathy.
I think we can take the probably out of that and say certainly full steam ahead. I can't imagine any steam being lost by the sound of things over there.
Don't worry, my parents have told me no more ideas for the next 12 months. They don't want any more jobs just yet.
Ban on ideas. Oh, my gosh. Just write them down secretly and hide them away, hide them away, hide them away. All the guests on the podcast get the chance to ask me something. Is there anything that you want to ask me?
Yeah, okay. If you were in private practice now running a team of clinicians, what would you be looking at doing in regards to the NDIS?
Oh, gosh. What a foxy one. There's a couple of layers to that question. I'm just going to replay it quickly in my head. So if I was in private practice with a team of clinicians, I'm going to pause at that point. I would go long and hard all day, every day on organizational culture. And by the sound of it, you're well on track with that. So what is it that makes us unique? What is it that we're super proud of that we do really differently? And I would really hone that and define that, and it will kind of zoom all the way back to values, team values, things like that. So what are the values? How do we live them? Maybe even in our personal lives, not just our professional lives. So that's something that I am having a lot of conversations about. I'm just back from a conference in Singapore where it was just plastered all over the place, which was really, really interesting. In terms of leading a team in the NDIS, I would know that my hard work on defining and living and breathing organizational culture would be one of the best possible anchors for leading the team through change. And NDIS equals change. It's just spelt differently. So, I appreciate your caution with waiting to see what happens, you know, in the next few months with these tiered pricing, because there may be parts of what business owners currently do that are no longer viable. And so to be thinking about new and different service delivery models, I would be talking with my team about that. How can we delight our customers, exceed their expectations, kick all those goals, but in a different way other than one-to-one therapy? I have a bit of a hunch that that's going to be a bit of a thing of the past. And that drives us into thinking about other service delivery models. What are they going to be? How are ours going to look? And, working that team through the change management process of that and really digging deep into the human values, human rights, and all of that good stuff, I think would be a bit of a change amplifier as well. That was a really rambling question, answer. So let me summarize really, really quickly. Digging deep into organizational culture, identifying living, breathing values, change management, and rethinking how you do things as a team. Is that the answer you even wanted?
that sounds good. It's just that in itself, you know, I'm all over the organizational culture. I know there was a company called Culture Amp that I looked at years ago, and they are like enormous now. And when I spoke with them and was reading all their stuff, it was like two guys. I guess I see that as a huge thing. And I know one of the ways that I've drawn on how I want to manage my team is that I guess there were some, after working in private practice myself for other people for, you know, over 5 years, I really kind of went with what were the things that I sort of wish I was able to do, or what things I didn't necessarily love all the time. And while, yeah, I had amazing experiences and things there, I just really wanted to go, okay, these are things that didn't always sit right with me or kind of were the bugbear for me. So I've just really tried to, start with those things as trying to make my team really cohesive and happy. And I don't want them to feel like they work for me. I want it to be like we're a team, and I'm kind of, I guess I'm the team leader, but I don't necessarily feel like I have to be their boss and manage what they do. Like, I'm obviously, of course, happy to, I read through reports and I brainstorm and problem solve and things with them, but I guess I see it as quite a shared role rather than I'm a boss. And you know, I mean, the girls go into their sessions, I'm not there to hold their hand, and they go in and do their thing, and they're the boss of what goes on in that session. So they don't need to step out and for me to, you know, start telling them what to do or how to do it. We kind of have some expectations and we talk about what they are in terms of our values and what we need to happen here for the whole practice to work. Not just for me, it's for everyone. So, we like our dinners out too. We all like to combine our staff meeting with a delicious dinner somewhere as well. it's nice to have
the business attached. Love it. Yeah. Love it. Love it. Wow. Well done. What a rock star 3 years. I can only imagine what the next three are going to look like. Flavored by the NDIS or not, let's just kind of wait and see. Thank you so much for coming on and sharing your business story today. Thanks, Kerri-Ann.
Thank you, Kathy, and thank you for all your help over the years as well. You have definitely been a guiding light that I know that it's kind of there in the background sometimes, but I know that I've definitely come to you a number of times and read all your things that you put out. So I kind of like the idea that someone's been there, done that, and it's good to kind of share ideas and bounce things off you as we need as well.
Oh, lovely of you to say. My absolute pleasure. See ya. Come back and give us an update next year with the goings on.
Oh, sure. Hopefully it's still all good stories.
It will be. See ya. Thanks, Marianne. See you. Thank you for investing your time right through to the end of this episode of Private Practice Secrets. If you're running a private practice and keen for more business confidence and management know-how, head on over to our website, nacre.com.au. I'll spell it, nacre.com.au. Over there, you'll find all sorts of business resources and inspiration, blogs, forms, web events, freebies, our virtual conference information, workshops, and more. And don't be shy. Take advantage of the free power call and book yourself into my diary for the chance to have a business chat and to pick my brains. I'm Kathy Love, Allied Health Business Coach, wishing you and your business a brilliant day.